We thank Dr. Ravelo, and we have the participation of Alejandra Arafat Angulo Perkins, who sent us a video from Austria. She is a specialist in neurosciences and neurobiology. She currently works at the University of Vienna in the Department of Biology, Cognitive Biology. And the title of her talk is The Educational System and the Scientific System, an Opportune Dialogue and Distribution of Knowledge. Good afternoon, compañeros and compañeras zapatistas, members of the National International Sixth Declaration, students of the Escuelita Zapatista, brothers and sisters of Mexico and the world. First, I would like to thank the invitation to participate again in this dialogue. In truth, every time I reflect on the nature of conciencias, it seems more incredible to me. Outside of this reality, and I like this because it is another reality which we are trying to build together. In this participation, I would like to speak about education, especially its relationship to scientific thought, but placing special emphasis on some of the misunderstandings in what we believe is education or what it's good for. This will lead us naturally to understand why in science we see manifestations of the illnesses of the educational system. The final idea of this talk is to think about what we want to learn, the type of knowledge that we want, which is very much related to the form this knowledge is produced, and finally, on how we could transform the objectives of science based on an education for women and men who are free. Let us begin then, taking a minute to think about the purpose of education. Of education in general. I'm not talking about elementary school or school doctrines, salutes to the flag and so on. I'm talking about education without the separation of educational periods. What would be the purpose of education? Perhaps the simplest is to learn, to know, to appropriate knowledge, the cultural knowledge of our species. This is learned. It is not a skill that comes to us from birth. One of the most visible examples is language. Regardless of where we were born, we have the innate ability to develop language. And even though it takes time for us to learn our language in school or outside of it, this is the code with which we will later be able to express our needs, communicate situations, and also inform ourselves from others. But we don't go to school only to learn a language. In elementary school, we have other topics, math, history, civics, etc. So we see that once we know the code, we are educated to learn the history of our people, but also knowledges and rules that are supposed to be good for us. In other words, education serves to, or should serve to, make us people with more tools to understand and survive the world we live in. Up to here, I think we're all in agreement on what is supposed to be the main purpose of education. But what happens if those who decide what is good or useful for someone has different objective? If what interests them is not for people to be critical, independent, creative, but the opposite, for them to be passive, obedient, not to question, to believe everything they're told, inside and outside. And so what happens if, depending on where you live or how much money you have a certain type of education or another? These are some of the issues, or delicate issues, regarding education. it's not just a matter of telling us that they built a school, we have textbooks, we have more teachers, we reformed the educational model. This is all empty. What if I tell you that the school was built next to an airplane factory and that the careers I offer are technologies of manufacturing and that my educational model is called incompetencies, which is based on the capitalization of knowledge. What I want to highlight here is that while the original purpose of education is what we talked about at first, in truth, for many years, it has been transformed into an indoctrination in an official way where they teach us blind obedience, where they train us to pass exams, and the tools that give us serve mainly to serve in the economies of the market. This way, the way we understand and participate in the world depends greatly on what we learn, on how we learn it, and what we do with what we learn. Access to knowledge is another important point. Access to knowledge should be facilitated by centers of knowledge, but oftentimes it seems to be conditioned by them. For example, one of the aspects that limit this access has to do with economics. We know that education for those who have is not the same as that who the have-nots have. This doesn't mean that those who are above have all the tools for independence of thought and critical thought and so on, because they would become against the system. What distinguishes them is a type of indoctrination that each sector gets in order to develop a function within the capitalist market. I never saw Montessori schools, but I know that compañeros that came from those types of schools described them as more friendly, modern, that created impulse, creativity, and the freedom of the students, that many of the activities there had nothing to do with what we saw in public schools. I'm not only talking about the facilities and the educational materials that private schools offer. I'm also talking about the way in which they approach us to knowledge. Differently from many of the public schools where authoritarianism in a class might not be so strong, private schools would rather kick out a teacher rather than lose a student. Schools announce attractive programs that potentialize this type of attitudes. But in higher education, what is offered is modern facilities, English as a second language, computer equipment that is modern and up to date, and a selection of topics and techniques that would allow students to compete in the labor markets and in the business markets, and that's how they are announced. And it's not surprising that many of these have almost no humanist careers and large spaces for business development and communication and so on. At the same time, we see this difference in the context. The ways of evaluating are also different. In a private school, for a student to fail is okay as long as there are options to be paid for as a second chance. But once these are finished, the student has to pass because they are clients. These phenomena take place more grotesquely in in private institutions that have very little commitment with education or that operate as small businesses that profit from education. In the case of public schools, a different phenomenon occurs. like many groups that are very large, and the students cannot receive the same attention. Many problems are omitted. Desertion is much higher in these schools. And it has to do with students failing many courses. So we can see with these examples that the labor relationships and production relationship in educational centers will determine how knowledge is transmitted, what contents are prioritized, and therefore the results of the experience of learning. In other words, when we decide to enter an educational center, we add life experiences, knowledges, and ways of relating to each other that influence us throughout our life. That's why it is not only important to learn knowledge that is useful, but that we experience this process as an interactive act that is built, not something that is passive where we just memorize data so that we can have a title at the end. Another important point that limits the access to knowledge is the language in which it is taught. In Mexico, we have two important manifestations. One of them One of the most important wells that we have here is the intercultural university, where we acquire with experiences, and especially through a code or a language. Knowing that, it would be very obvious to think that one of the objectives of the educational system should be to maintain, cultivate, and distribute the use of the languages that exist in Mexico, as is done with many other cultural products, such as food, arts and crafts, or music. Well, it is very contradictory than when it has to do with tourism and profiting from cultural institutions. The government is very Mexican and very proud, but it does not do so with indigenous languages because it does not profit from them, because through this limitation, it marginalizes the population that does not speak Spanish, not only reducing the opportunities for education, but also limiting the expression and transmission of these cultural traditions, which are not profitable. So we have that in Mexico, education is mainly dominated by a single code, which is Spanish, and secondly by English, which has also created another limitation to access and limiting the quality of knowledge. Before going on to the last part of my talk, I would like to mention two examples in a European country where they don't have the many languages that we have, but with the four they have are included in every official document. Translations are obligatory in any kind of voting, and this way, language is not a limitation, at least not in certain aspects. Another interesting data in the same country was to see that part of the basic education includes, for example, to learn how to cook, to take a basic cookbook where both boys and girls learn to cook many languages, but also to distinguish between them, identify their nutrients, to balance their food intake and combine them appropriately, and to store the different types of food depending on how perishable it is. You might think that it is simple or not very relevant, but girls and boys learn to repair certain electrical appliances. And it's not that in Switzerland everything is perfect. It's far from being so in many aspects, but what you do see is that without gender prejudices, these skills are learned since basic education, elementary education. because they believe that this type of knowledge contributes to develop self-sufficiency, whether to feed oneself correctly or to repair appliances that are part of our environment or our everyday use. As I've said, in this same space, not everything is about copying models or imitating what is done elsewhere. But for us to build our own models, our own systems, according to what we have and the identity that characterizes us in the various regions. One of the negative aspects of Mexico that is often mentioned is that we are too big, we have too many cultures, we're too diverse. But if we think about it, this is also one of our greatest strengths and wealths as a country. This is also happening with English, for example. Throughout the world, it is the most popular language taught in schools as a second language, not only as the utopia of a code with which all of us can communicate with each other, but as a hegemony of Anglo-Saxon culture, because it's not only the language, but also the culture that we are taught. In this regard, with our neighbors in the north, we are strongly influenced by them. Not only in the increasing use of English words to denominate things, but also in the culture of consumption, in the aspirations of life. The synonym of this type of culture is something that is better or of better quality, but especially the educational model, which is based on private education as a synonym of quality, an indoctrination to accept the capitalist system as a perfect model. And we should not be surprised that history books are as limited as any type of propaganda. Finally, let us examine how all of these problems with education, their ends, its ends, its contents, and its use, reflect or are reflected in the science that is done in Mexico. Let us also talk about how scientific thought can help us to resolve many of these problems. Noam Chomsky has studied how historically the educational system has changed throughout time, with a predominance in indoctrination for obedience. However, something that I think is very valuable of his reflections is that he says that we should not accept to reach a research institution to develop critical scientific thoughts and to question our reality, challenging doctrines and absolutisms. Let's make the finality of education to be to form ourselves as thinking independent subjects, regardless of whether our path is formal research as scientists. Our thoughts should be critical, especially considering the disinformation war in which we are. What good is it to arrive at this point and have a position as a scholar and do our experiment if, as social subjects, we continue to be passive and we do not question the political, economic, and social reality where we live? What good is it to follow the scientific method where the science we do is co-opted by pharmaceutical companies or by the journal corporations, where freedom only exists if we follow the main currents of scientific production? This education has deformed us as scientists and have become obedient to the system. Just like a child that questions the teacher and the teacher has problems, scientists who question production relations in society have problems. It is very clear that despite the fact that the academic and scientific environment seems to be less vulnerable and is, in a way, less vulnerable to manipulation of information, since it implies necessarily a violation of the scientific method, of the objectivity of this method. It is also true that oftentimes we do not ask ourselves how capitalism appropriates the knowledge we generate, what use it makes of it, who profits from this, the production of these textbooks and journals, who officialize and distribute knowledge, and under which principles. The connection between science and education is not only in the important task of making available knowledge generated, that they are free of access to a group of students and colleagues, but that it should be truly of the public dominion and benefit for society, whether as a contribution, a theoretical contribution to understand a phenomenon, or as a practical knowledge to be applied in some medical, biological development, or what have you. In both cases, of public dominion. In this point, I would like to go back to the Anglophonization of knowledge. Unfortunately, for science of any country who is not an English-speaking country, in order for this science to be recognized or validated, it must be published in English. Otherwise, the impact of the publication will be limited to journals considered local, which will hardly enter the large leagues of scientific commerce. Here we see that it doesn't matter much whether the population of a country benefits from the result of these research, which are financed mostly by public money, but that in the exchange of knowledge between different cultures will be conditioned and selected by the language in which it is published and by the evaluators of scientific committees, which in ideal conditions, of course, they should value objectivity of the knowledge, but we also know that oftentimes, and many times, they work as an elitist committee that obeys to other interests, such as prestige, where it comes from. This doesn't mean that there are no publications in Spanish or other languages, but what it does show is that trend that scientific capitalism creates, diminishing the number of people who have access to this knowledge, and the number, but also the profile of the people who are accessing this knowledge, and thus limits the interchange of knowledge between different countries. If it is not through these regulating institutions who also profit from it. What can we do as scientists to participate and contribute with the development of our country? The current model tells us that, well, publishing in high-impact journals and publishing a lot, and therefore we can keep afloat in our position and our curriculum and obtain the necessary points to maintain ourselves there. But if what we want is to do quality science and, of course, to publish, but also to make these publications truly public, that the translation of articles is necessary, that it be material that is available not only in universities but on other educational levels in general for the schools of our countries, that we change the relationship, the work relationships in our groups, avoiding the abuse of power, the mercenaries of science, and fostering independence and the methods of scientific production, respecting our cultural ways of doing science, but especially motivating critical thoughts outside of the institutions and labs and research labs. As I see it, at the same time as we desire sciences to have once again an important role in the development of autonomy of a people, we should look at education as a true seed that will transform the following generations, that education serves the purposes that we are talking about, that access to information stops being marginalized by money or language, that content does not escape from us but makes us more free, self-sufficient and creative. And this way, science and education for the future shall be a manifestation of the new generations formed not to follow a regime or to accept absolute truths, but to know, understand, and challenge the problems that they have to live, benefiting everyone from the knowledge that we have been accumulating as a species from thousands of years. As always happens in this type of encounters, we have more questions than answers. But as we have seen, what's important is not to have all the answers, but to ask ourselves all the questions regarding what we want to know. With this, I conclude my participation, not without saying goodbye fraternally to everyone who is there. And I thank you for your time and see you soon. Thank you.
Yeah.